Okay, good evening. It's Tuesday evening, November 13th. This is Rabbi Feldman's shir. Tonight's shir is sponsored by Micha and Howard Kaufman to commemorate the 30th yard site of Howard's mother, Micha's grandmother, Miriam Gittel Bas Servar and Halevi, and also in Lezecher Nishmas, Sachya Aryeh Ben David.
Good evening. Continuing a Chesed-related series, which was kind of rooted in Parshas Vayera, taking us a few weeks further than that. So our slated topic for tonight was Bikur Cholim. Bikur Cholim is a vast, vast topic. Has a lot to be said about it. Shulchan Aruch has a lot of svarim that are written about it specifically. We'll try tonight just to touch on some of the topics. I apologize for the late start. Possibly may overlap into next week, but I think at least tonight probably will at least hit some of the headlines, some of the major points. Bikur Cholim is generally considered to be a mitzvah min ha-Torah. It's a little bit of a discussion where you get that from. It's something that we touched upon in previous weeks. It's a little bit of a discussion whether that's an accurate statement or not, but that's the way it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that it's a mitzvah to be mevaker cholim. And it really comes from any number of possible sources. On the one hand, as we've discussed in the past few weeks, so the Rambam assumes that all of the acts of chesed that we do are included within the general rubric of of the Ahasla Re'echa Kamocha. He then goes on to say somewhat cryptically that the specific examples that we have are actually rabbinic institutions, as the rabbis came and then defined certain categories. So what exactly is added by there being a mitzvah the Rabbanan on top of the mitzvah min HaTorah of the Ahasla Re'echa Kamocha is not exactly clear. It's something that we spoke about a little bit, some of the theories in past weeks. But in any case, it certainly fits into that structure. And then in addition to that, there are a few other sources. We also mentioned in the past weeks how Yisro makes a comment to Moshe Rabbeinu when he tells him how to set up the whole system, that there should be a way of doing things. There should be a hierarchy. You shouldn't have everyone coming to you with every little problem. And you should teach people how to behave. Etc. A few more things. So in that pasuk, as a derech yelchaba, the Gemara tells us in the Maseches Bav Metzia, that's a reference to Bikur Cholim, to teach them to be mevater cholim. And that's also possibly quoted as a source, not only for Chesed as a whole, but here specifically Bikur Cholim is invoked. And there was another reference the Gemara has in the Maseches Nedarim, where a lot of the sugyas of Bikur Cholim show up around Daf Lametes, Daf Mem, Daf Melalef, and that whole area. You have a lot of discussions about Bikur Cholim. Much of the halachas that you find in Shulchan Aruch are drawn from that section of Maseches Nedarim. So in that context, the Gemara has a statement, Remez, Lebikur Cholim, and Atar Minayin. How do you know there's a Remez to Bikur Cholim, a hint? And it's a little bit of a question, well, how exactly you interpret that. The Torah Tanimah has a whole discussion about what exactly that means, whether that means it's a Din Min HaTorah or not. But there's a hint from the statement in Parshas Korach, when Moshe Rabbeinu says about the behavior of these people who are about to be punished. Because we'll see who's right and who's wrong. If these people live a long life, then we'll know that they were tzaddikim, that they were righteous, and if not, then we'll know otherwise. And so in that context, it says that in Kamos Chodim, if they live a life like everyone else, they live a long life, and it ends up that people are visiting them, they go through a whole cycle of health and then illness, and people come and visit them, and then they die. So then they'll know that they were right. So included in that description, the idea that people will come and visit them, so that's apparently another hint to the idea of Bikur Cholim. So there is more specific indications. And again, we have the whole theme that we've mentioned in the past few weeks, that all of this was also touched by the concept of imitating HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and as the Gemara says, that the Gemara has it in two different places, in two different ways, that we're meant to follow after God's ways, the Gemara tells us in Sefer Sota. So just like he is Mevaker Chola, so too we have to be Mevaker Chola, just like he does that, we do that. And the Gemara in Shabbos on Kuf Lamed Gimel has it a little bit differently, talking about our expression at the Kriyas Yom Suf when we said, Zekei Levi Aveihu, this is my God, I want to be like him. How do you like him? So you follow on his path and you visit the sick, you do nice things, you do compassionate things. So all of this is included as a possible source. So everyone agrees we certainly have a mitzvah, whether we call it a mitzvah deraisa, whether we call it a mitzvah midivrei sofer, whether you call it a hint, whether you call it a derabbanan, an institution on top of the Torah. Everyone agrees that certainly there is a very major inyan of Bikur Cholim, and certainly as an extension of this idea of imitating the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And we know that even specifically, because the Gemara tells us also that that was what was going on in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, when Avram was recuperating from his milah on the third day. So Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to visit him, And a lot of discussion about that. Medrash HaGadol writes, the Sefer Medrash HaGadol, the later collection of Midrashim from earlier sources, writes that, again, this is a source for Bikur Cholam and HaTorah. We can't say Bikur Cholam and HaTorah because we know we have to imitate everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. And here we're told specifically that HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to visit Avram at that time. That was understood to be a time fulfillment of Bikur Cholam. So a lot of discussion there. Chaim raised the question of why did he come Davka then? Why didn't he come before? Why didn't he come earlier? So maybe this is when he was most needed because he was in most pain. Others point out, though, the physical danger by that point, even though it's painful, the physical danger by that point had basically passed. So that perhaps Shamaika Hatgos, who's the Belzer dying in Eretz Yisrael, has a discussion about this in his Shuvah, that perhaps the point was, because Baruch was trying to show us that we visit not only if it's a life-threatening illness when he's really in trouble, but even when he's just in pain and he's just suffering. So then that's also a time when Bikur Cholam is equally relevant. But in any case, you find that because Baruch Hu directly models this, and all other chesed, and this is also included in the context of the obligation to come and fulfill this mitzvah of Bikur Cholam. So there's a lot of discussion in the Svarim as to what are the reasons, why is it that, what are we trying to accomplish when we do this particular act of chesed, what is it that goals include, and a lot of discussion draws upon the Ramban. The Ramban has a Sefer Torah Sa'adam, where he goes through a lot of these end-of-life segments, really about Avelos. He talks about things surrounding Avelos. I don't like to talk about the Kehol in the context of Avelos, but it's a little depressing, but unfortunately it's very often in the same Svarim. It's very often grouped together, close to it, so in the same types of Svarim. So in the Torah Sa'adam, the Ramban talks about a number of different reasons. And you find, for example, first of all, just the visit itself, just the idea of companionship, just the idea that there should be somebody there, is already an accomplishment. And in fact, Barash writes in his commentary to Chumash at the beginning of Parshas Vayera that therefore it doesn't even matter even if a person doesn't see you, even if a person doesn't feel you there, but if you come and you visit somebody who is sleeping, and later on somebody's going to tell them that you were there, so that's also an accomplishment. That's also a fulfillment of Bikur Cholam, because in addition to all the other goals we'll talk about in a second, just being there is a goal. So he knows that you were there, even if he didn't wasn't aware of it at the time, but he's going to find out later, that's also an accomplishment. Some of the commentaries on Chumash write that maybe that's what Kadosh Baruch Hu was accomplishing or showing us by visiting Avraham Avinu, because as we'll see, a lot of the other reasons that they have for Bikur Cholam don't really apply to the Kadosh Baruch Hu, as we'll discuss one by one. And that happens to be a topic of discussion that a lot of the Mefarshim and Chumash bring up, that a lot of the reasons that we have for this mitzvah are not really things that are going to apply directly to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So at the very least, what does he accomplish? He accomplished showing, being there. Vayerei Lo, that appearing, being there, and that's a major part of Bikur Cholam as well. So perhaps that's what the is modeled by the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that's also exemplified in that case. Yeah. So. Yeah, we'll talk about that. That's an interesting concept. We'll get to that, God willing. It's an interesting idea. Very, very interesting idea. We'll get to it soon. So in any event, so in addition to this, the other reasons that you find are that in addition to being there, also to providing company when he's awake, Chaim Kanievsky writes in one of his farmers, quoted in one of his farmers, and I quote from him, that because of the additional reasons that even if they don't tell him you're there when he wakes up, it's still worth it to go and give him when he's asleep because of the additional reasons. But on top of that, if he is awake when you're there, so providing him company and providing him encouragement is certainly a major thing. But there are other functions which can be accomplished even without him knowing, and that is there is an idea that you're supposed to try to help out. You're supposed to try to accomplish things for him both spiritually and physically. So spiritually in the area of prayer, and we'll talk a little bit more about that because that's the major emphasis. So the idea is that you should be inspired to daven on his behalf. And the assumption seems to be that you're not going to be so inspired if you don't actually see it firsthand. If you go to the person's bed and you see how they're doing, so you're going to be inspired more, and we'll talk more about that. So if that's the case, so then that's one of the major issues. And there again, that's something they point out, that that's not shayach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to come to visit Avraham, so he's going to find out how he's going to do it, so he's going to pray to himself. So even though you do find expressions in the Gemara of HaKadosh Baruch Hu praying, which is an interesting theological concept in and of itself, Pashas, that's not why he has to visit Avraham. So that's one of the reasons why, again, Mefarshim have to come up with other aspects as to what it is that God was accomplishing in this visit. And there's also the aspect of physical assistance, that when you're there to provide whatever they need, they're going to see that people who are in bed are not able to accomplish something themselves, not able to take care of whatever needs they have. So to be there for that is, of course, also a major thing, and that's also a large part of the reason why you find an identification with this mitzvah and Hatzalos Nefeshos and Pikuach Nefesh. Who knows what a difference you're making to their care by being there to provide assistance. Some write, for example, the Maharil, and others write that that's another source of Bikuach Nefesh. You don't need a special source for it because it's part of Pikuach Nefesh. It's part of a person whose their health is threatened. Who knows how much of a difference it makes if they're going to be there to take care of them. So that's certainly an aspect. And some point also that that's also could be what the word Bikur means. You find the Bikur in the context of Karbanos doesn't necessarily mean to visit. It means to look into what's necessary, to investigate a little bit. The Karen Arbor in his commentary to Nadarim writes this, and others write this as well, that it could be that's what we mean. We say Bikur Cholim. It shouldn't necessarily be interpreted as visiting for sick. It means to look into their condition and to see what you can do to make a difference and what you can do to help. So very often that means you physically go there and see what's going on and see how you can help. But it could mean any other way also of finding out what's going on, and perhaps that's what the language suggests. And there again, so the question is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu needed to visit him directly in order to find out? So that's, again, a part of the discussion of the Parshanis in the beginning of Vayera to figure out exactly how that fits in. Although some of the Svarim do point out that the Elamai, so that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. If you follow the whole discussion the Gemara has in the Sefer Bava Metzia, what happened was God came to Avram, and originally God had worked it out that there weren't going to be anybody in the streets, there weren't going to be anybody traveling around, because if there were people traveling around, so Avram would feel obligated to host them, and that would be a big imposition on him. So therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu made it very hot, so people shouldn't be traveling around. But then he came to visit Avram. Avram is miserable because he doesn't have any chesed that he can do. There isn't anybody around. So then the next thing that happens, he sends the three guests. So some of the Sfarim and Chumash point out, you see, that's what you do when you're about to go. You go, you visit a sick person, he tells you, what do I need? Oh, I need ice cream. If I was going to bring people ice cream, so he goes, you go out to buy ice cream. So Avram needed guests, so Kadosh Baruch Hu sent him guests. That was a fulfillment of Bikur Cholim in that case. So that's a discussion. And some of Sfarim point out that nowadays, if people are in the hospitals, so first of all, the hospital officially takes care of the needs, and they also don't let you do anything. They don't let you take care of anything. It's against the hospital rules. So there is some discussion in some contemporary Sfarim. When a person is in a hospital, do you assume that that aspect of Bikur Cholim is perhaps less relevant? So it's unlikely that that's the case, because first of all, there are still things you can do, things you can do for them outside the hospital. And another, to call my father again, another point that he makes, and many Sfarim point out also, you can't underestimate how important this is. Hospitals take better care of people who are visitors. When the hospital sees that people are coming to check how they're doing, and that they have relatives, they have friends, they have people who care, so that impacts directly on what type of treatment they get. So that's also a very important point. Even in here again, the story points out, so again, it doesn't matter even if the person is not awake, if the person is not going to see you, or if it's a baby, let's say, is not going to perceive your presence. So all of that doesn't matter. There's still an accomplishment that happens from the visit. So these different reasons affect a lot of different things, as we'll talk about. First of all, there is a statement that the Gemara has. It's a little bit of a question how much it's applicable nowadays, but the statement itself is interesting. The Gemara says that it's not a good idea to visit not in the first quarter of the day or in the last quarter of the day. You should visit during the middle half, the middle 50%, not the first 25%, the last 25%. And that, the way it sounds like from the Gemara, is an issue of prayer also, that you want to be able to pray for the person, so you want to be motivated to know what's going on, and you want to get an accurate picture. And the general assumption is that as the day wears on, so the person's condition gets worse. So if you come in the first quarter of the day, you're not going to get a full picture of just how serious it is, because they're just waking up and they're apparently in a better state. And if you come in the last quarter of the day, things will look too depressing, you're not going to get a realistic picture either. If you want to get a realistic picture of what things are like, so it's better for you to come in the middle part of the day. It's not going to be too much to one extreme or the other. And other Sfarim, they don't see it that like that. They see it as an issue of being able to help out. And the assumption is that the people are being taken care of during those times, the beginning of the day and the end of the day. So first of all, you're not necessary. And second of all, maybe you're in the way if you're going to show up at that time. So better not to come during those times as far as this goal of being able to help out with what's going on. In any event, you don't find Bisman Hazad that people are really concerned about this, that people are necessarily making their visits around those pines. So Aruch HaShulchan and others say that nowadays we don't necessarily take this as an absolute requirement, maybe as a recommendation, and certainly if the needs are not going to come, if you can't work it out, if these are the only times you can come, so certainly everyone agrees that better to come than to not come because you can't work your schedule around these times. This again, we don't really find Bisman Hazad people being able to really cheshbon in such a major factor. But again, this idea of prayer you find as a very major theme, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But just tangentially, it raises an important issue, which is really not for now. It's a very sensitive issue, just to quickly mention. So normally we would assume that the idea is you're going to pray the person to get better, the person should have a refuah shleimah, the person shouldn't be suffering. So it touches a little bit on the very controversial question that is it ever appropriate to pray that the person shouldn't get better, the person should pass away. If you assume that the person is in such yisurin and they're not, they don't have any hope of getting better, so is it ever appropriate to pray that they should be spared from their suffering? That's a very sensitive topic, of course, and it's not something you want to really get into on one foot, but just to highlight the point that in this context you find some discussion about this. There is a Ran in his commentary to Maseches Nedarim, where he seems to suggest that it is acceptable to pray for somebody's death, that's what you perceive to be in their best interest. That there is Gemara Maseches Ksubis, which talks about the maidservant of Rebbe, and when Rebbe was there, Rebbe was very sick with a very painful disease, and the stomach malady, which the Gemara portrays as perhaps the most painful of illnesses that there were at that time. And all of the Talmidim were praying for him. They were all around the bed praying that he should live longer, that he should feel better. And this maidservant, she realized that this wasn't what he needed. She realized that he wasn't going to recover and he was just suffering. So she threw something to the ground to make a big noise. She smashed some kind of a utensil. And when she did that, so the students got distracted and they stopped davening for a minute just to see what was going on. And during that time, when she stopped and they stopped davening, so he passed away during that time. So there is some discussion as to what are we supposed to glean from that story. So there's a lot of questions you could ask, is that story halachically relevant or not? First of all, okay, so do we paskin halacha based on the maidservant to Rebbe? So the truth is we do. There are other Gemaras where they do quote her as a halachic source, so that's something that some of the Sfarim point out. And there's also the fact that the Gemara tells us the story at all. The fact that the Gemara tells us the story might be an indication that it was an appropriate action. So that's the view the Ran took. And others disagreed. Others in a chiv thought we didn't pass him like this, we don't pass him like that. Sorry, it's not an appropriate attitude. So a little bit there's a hashkafic issue here as to what exactly tefillah accomplishes. That's the way some Svarim explain. That we know that the halacha has it quite seriously that you're not allowed to do anything active that will bring somebody's death closer, even if you're motivated by rachmanis, even if you're motivated by trying to spare them from pain. So we're not permitted to take a physical action that will hasten someone's death, which gets into a very complicated discussion of what's called an action and what's called what we call a hasaros maneya, taking away something that's preventing it, and that's not the forum to really get into it. But once we assume that you're not supposed to do something active at least, whatever that refers to, so then the question becomes, so how do you categorize tefillah? So what is prayer? Is prayer considered to be an action? Is it something that human beings do and has ramifications in the real world? Or do we say, no, it's a appeal to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. A Kadosh Baruch Hu does it. It doesn't classify itself as an action. It has ramifications in other areas of halacha as well, and for interpreting other gemaras. So it suggested that that's the relevant issue here. Do you assume that that's what tefillah accomplishes? It accomplishes something as a human act? Or no, it's not a human act. It's still leaving things up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu to choose to act as he sees fit. So that's a debate that contemporary posts can continue. Do you assume that it's ever appropriate to daven in that direction? Do you assume, no, that's never the path we're supposed to take, and you always pray for Shlema, for you pray Sam, because Baruch Hu do what's best. That's a debate in Poskim that continues to go on, and that's an extension of this idea that one of the goals that you have in visiting people who are sick is this goal of tefillah. And this very sensitive question really touches upon a lot of other sensitive aspects also. If one perceives a person who is visiting as a person who is in a terminal stage, so then there are certain spiritual needs the person has, and you have to be very sensitive and aware to know what's appropriate to say and what's not appropriate to say. And there's a whole discussion in Shulchan Aruch as far as vidui is concerned, as far as encouraging a person to confess their sins and to take care of whatever outstanding affairs that they have and need to be attended to. And there's a language Shulchan Aruch like that. They should tell the person, they shouldn't get scared, that we say this to everybody who's sick. It's just a precaution. It doesn't necessarily mean anything. It's still kibay. So this, of course, takes a lot of sensitivity and a lot of awareness. But you do find also that this is a goal accomplished within Bikur Cholim to assist the patient in that way. And it also has a reflective impact on the person visiting also. Should also recognize that they have to worry about their own spiritual state, which is also something that you find on the Mefarshim talking about. In any event, this idea of prayer is a concept which finds tremendous emphasis in the Sfarim. And again, drawing a lot from this Ramban, which is the basis for a lot of discussions about what the goals of Bikur Cholim are. And there you find the Ramban has an expression which the Ramah quotes, that somebody who goes to visit a Cholim and doesn't pray for him, lo kiyem es ha-mitzvah, something like that, he's not fulfilled in the mitzvah. So there's a lot of discussion about what exactly that expression means. It seems to say that that's everything, that if you did everything else but you don't pray for him, then it's nothing. So is that really the case? It's a little bit hard to understand. You find in some later Sfarim they kind of water down the language a little bit. For example, there's a contemporary Sefer Enoch Bikur Cholim which really changes the structure of that sentence. It says, to ever mvakir es ha-cholah, lo l'tol also, lo mvakir shrachim, not for his advantage, and doesn't down the frame. So that clearly changes the whole emphasis. So that Vishal Yankov Fisher, who was dying in the Eidah Charedis in the business, that he has a hashkam on the Sefer. It's called Pnei Baruch and Avelos. He also has a Bikur Cholim, so he points out in the footnote that he changed the language. So he says, that if you don't daven for him, that's it, you're not Yosef. So what exactly that means is a good question, because it is an extreme statement. So there are a lot of theories in the Sfarim as to what it means. Maybe it really means that Tefillah is really the whole story. Or maybe what the Ramban is saying, and if you look at his language inside, it could support this interpretation, that he's saying there's an additional chiyuv that you have to visit and take care of whatever he needs, and you have to daven for him. And if you don't daven, then you didn't do that responsibility, you didn't fulfill that mitzvah. Others interpret it as you didn't fulfill the mitzvah properly, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah to full extent. And like the same idea you have, Ron comments on the Mishnah that we say in Pesach night, in the Haggadah, that Rabbi Gamliel says, whoever doesn't say these three things was not Yotzi Dei Chavoso. So there he says also, you didn't do it right. You didn't do it at all, you didn't do it perfectly. So there are a lot of suggestions as to what exactly the Ramban means, what exactly the Ramah means. But at least the starting point is this kind of extreme version that whoever doesn't pray is not accomplishing the mitzvah. And then there's a discussion of how absolutely is that meant to be taken. You didn't fulfill this aspect of mitzvah, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah perfectly. Whatever it is, you do find certainly this tremendous emphasis on prayer, and you find that affecting a lot of the halachas. So there is a text that you find, you know, in some of the texts that we find we add into Shemot Esrei, you find different texts that are suggested. Shabbos is a little bit of a different text that's recommended. You know, the Shabbos in the Lizot, that we don't really want to pray on Shabbos, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. You also find a discussion, the Gemara has elsewhere, a discussion that somebody has a cholah in his house, so he should go to a chacham, he should go to somebody who has a yeshiva in town and ask him, either to daven for him the way some of the Mefarshim understand, or to teach him how to daven properly, as others understand. And as the commentaries over there point out, and the Ramah and Hazach HaMosh explains, this is kind of developed into the practice of the Mishaberach, recited in shuls, as the kind of the modern version of what that represents. The time of Kriyas HaTorah is considered to be a time of special rachamim, therefore it's appropriate to be taught then, and the practice is even on Shabbos. You know, we are maybe more familiar with it from Shabbos or from the rest of the week, but the idea is it should be done in shul during Kriyas HaTorah, even on Shabbos, and even that was a little bit of a discussion, because it's not a pashut thing to do such a tefillah on Shabbos, and we'll talk more about that. But there are nuskhos that we find, if you look in the Siddurim, for example, in the Lishmon Esrei, there's a special nuskhos that is printed there. Certain tefillahs that we find that are specifically suggested. The Shulchan Aruch goes through a lot of the details that are relevant to that and to the obligation of tefillah that comes out of this. In addition, you also find an emphasis placed on conversation. And some of the Sfarim make that a specific point, the recognition that the Cholah benefits from having somebody to talk to. And then conversation has a lot of subsets. There is just the active conversation itself. There is giving somebody advice, which of course also is a little bit risky. You have to know what you're talking about if you're going to give advice. Filling people in on what's going on that they want to know about. That's also risky because you also have to be careful not to tell them things that are going to aggravate them. It's often our sense that if a person, lost a relative or lost a friend, so strictly speaking, Shulchan Aruch says not to tell them, which is difficult because you have to be able to make sure they're not going to find out in a worse way, which is not so easy. But strictly speaking, that's the din of Shulchan Aruch, not supposed to, if a person loses a relative when he's in a state of illness, you're not supposed to tell them. And if you do tell them, you're supposed to do it in a very toned down way, without a lot of crying, with a lot of anguish, and without kriyas or discussion. It should be done in a way that's going to minimize whatever additional tzad the cholov could find. So this conversation is something that is on the one hand very important, on the other hand very tricky. You have to have chachma to know what to say and what not to say. And that's certainly a major concern. The Shulchan Aruch also records that there's a kind of a protocol as to when people come. That first, really, people who aren't very close friends or family shouldn't come until after the third day. The close friends come right away, but the people who aren't from the immediate circle should wait till after the third day. That's because the assumption is a person is going to be affected negatively, whether it means spiritually or whether it means emotionally, by being labeled a chola too quickly. So if the moment they get sick, all of a sudden people from far and wide are coming and visiting them, so that could have a negative effect in some sense of the word. So it should only be the closer people who they enjoy having around all the time who should be there at the first 2 days. And then if it goes on for a third day, then people who are less intimately connected will come. Unless the expression is some very serious illness which descends immediately, so then it's not a question, everyone can see right away, certainly a chola, so then that would change. But strictly speaking, that's also taking into consideration the way the person perceives how he's being felt by everyone else. And that's a big deal also as far as the conversation and as far as what goes on and the type of sensitivity that has to be had. And therefore, the Sfarim point out, which hopefully should be self-understood, that it's important that a person shouldn't be a burden on the whole. He has to, again, have the type of sensitivity to know when is he welcome and when is he not welcome, when is he stayed too long. When is he making conversation more for his own sake than for the sake of the patient? And the Bnei Baruch Hu goes into this at great length. Sometimes they ask all kinds of questions which you're not really trying to keep him company. You're just curious about what's going on with his treatment and his life and all of that. It's not really for the tuelis of the chola. And it's very tricky. You can't, there's no real say so. You have to have a sensitivity to know what's going on. As they point out, sometimes the person is going to make a big effort to properly receive his guests. He's going to have to sit up. He's going to have to, even though Shulchan Aruch says he shouldn't stand for anybody, shouldn't stand for a rabbi, shouldn't stand for a king, shouldn't exert himself. But nonetheless, the reality is that a person is going to exert himself, is going to make an effort, and that could end up having a negative effect. So to know when you're going one way and when you're going the other way is a very tricky thing, and it's a part of the sensitivity that is required of all chesed, is required here also to know a little bit how to know a little bit how to do things. There is also, unfortunately, an issue which is sad that there should be such an issue, but there's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramach, which the Maharil disagrees with him, about what if you have an unfortunate situation where somebody is a shone. Let's say you have two people who are enemies. So if you have two people who don't get along, seems to be against the din of the Torah, right? You have a din of sister, achicha, b'vavecha. But nonetheless, the reality is you have people who could be labeled as shone, who could be labeled as an enemy. So should an enemy visit somebody who's his enemy when they're sick? So the Ramah advises against it, actually, because Ramah is concerned that it's going to look like you're gloating. And you find this halacha both in the context of bikecholim and in the context of nichum aveilim, that it's going to look like you're happy and the person suffering. And that's very problematic. So to go to a funeral is not true, because everyone ends up that way, so it's not considered to be interpreted in that way. But when a person is sick, when a person is mourning, so the Ramah advises that a person who is a shone shouldn't come. And there's some discussion of what that means. Ivan Soloveitchik and Shefer and Arvelos, he suggests that the issue is not so much what the person is going to think, but that people around are going to think that he's being made fun of. People who see this happening are going to think that the guy's gloating, and it's going to take away from the covet of the patient if they perceive that that's what's going on. In the context of Nechum we define the discussion also. But practically speaking, so it's a discussion how much we act on this. So the Sfarim point out that it really all depends on the Shacharites on the side of the page over there, that the truth is certainly a subjective concept. And it all depends how Kolafi has in us, or how exactly are we talking, what exactly level of animosity is it that we're talking about. And in theory, if it's played right, it could be used as a peacemaking effort. It could be used as a way to change things. So then they suggest that maybe you should call first and make sure that it'll be appreciated. Or just have this goal in mind that by coming, you know, you can bring about a change in things. If that's the case, that's what the Aruch HaShulchan and others write, so then it certainly should be done if it can be pulled off in such a way. So in theory, you have the statement for the Ramah that it could look like loading, it could look like something inappropriate, but that's very subjective as to what exactly is the reality going on, and it's up to the people involved to try to navigate things so that it should be a positive experience rather than a negative experience. Hi. Yes. So that's explicit in all of the Svarim. The question is, which also wasn't much of a question, so there is a Gemara in Meseches Gittin, which says about the Kecholim and about other acts of Chesed, so Mepharnishim, Mebakar Chaloihim, we support Aniye Akum together with Aniye Yisrael. And we include the visits of the nations of the world together with those of Jews. So there's a question, a little bit of discussion in Yisharim with the Rashi and Iran and the Shach, a little bit of a discussion whether that means only Davka together. Look, you're going to go to the hospital room and you go to the double room and it's one Jew and one non-Jew, so you're not going to just visit the Jew and insult the non-Jew, so you should visit them both. But we probably don't pass in that way. Probably pass in that it's even without them being together. It's not furnishing in the Yakum with Akum in the end, we don't make any distinction based on that, and we don't require it necessarily to be together with Jews where it's going to create some type of a problem. Down, that's the way it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, and the way it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, and we applied the Kecholim both to Jews and non Jews equally.
Do you act the same way
you often feel about some national people? We could. Avraham Avinu prayed for Avinach. It's not out of the... You know, there could be differences in general. They want to serve you once. You know, the different, you know, there could be differences. And so there's no difference, but the thrust is the same. You know, it depends on what kind of person it is. You know, it depends on what type of what you want to do it to serve. It's not out of the question. So, in theory, it could be very similar. So we'll see. You know, we may have to overlap this topic a little bit into next week. But just to get to the point of Ben Gilo that you raised earlier, so there is a very interesting concept, so we'll at least try to get this concept in, and then maybe we'll continue. The question of Ben Gilo, the Gemara says that a person who visits somebody takes away 1/60th of their illness, and then the Gemara goes on to say that's doubtful of the Ben Gilo, whatever that means, and we'll discuss that in a second. So two concepts we have to understand. What does it mean to take away a 60th of your illness? And what does it mean to be Ben Gilo? So it sounds like from the Gemara in Bava Metzia that it means you're actually absorbing a 60th of the illness, because the Gemara seems to suggest that it's a sakana to visit a chola, and yet we do it anyway. We override the sakana, and if the sakana comes from you're taking away a 60th of the illness. And there are those who understand the Ben Gilo idea in a very mystical sense, that it refers to somebody who's born under the same mouth or born under the same sign, some type of spiritual concept, that you have this kind of a link and you absorb a 60th through that. It should be pointed out, we don't really learn this in school, but if you look at the other Rishonim, so most other Rishonim don't say it in that mystically oriented way, they say it in a more psychologically oriented way, that it either refers to somebody of the same age group, or somebody of the same general generation, or somebody of the same temperament. And the idea being that if it's going to be a pleasant visit, if the person's going to be happy to see this person, either because they identify with them or because they can have what they can talk about, so then it's going to really change the atmosphere and it's going to lighten their load and it's going to take away a 60th of their illness. That's the Meiri who says like that, but it's not just the Meiri. A lot of other Rishonim also, Rashi and Sefes and Dharam, if you learn a Dharam, so Rashi is actually not the parish you look to first. It's actually not really Rashi, probably. It was probably written maybe by others. But you really look at the Ran first, so you miss this Rashi, because it's not like every other Masechta where you go to Rashi first. I think that's what Rashi says in the Darn, that refers to this as Bachar LeBachar, Zakim LeZakim, somebody of the same generation is more likely to have a positive effect on them. And others point out also that as far as Tefillah is concerned, that it has a positive aspect for the purposes of Tefillah, because you are going to be inspired more to pray for somebody who you identify with more, especially when it's a similar age group, so you feel that you can relate to whatever types of maladies that they are going through, and that whatever's happening to them could, Rachmanu Litzlan, happen to you also. So that has a special connection as far as Tzila is concerned. So some of the Litzlan write that that's the idea, that when a person visits somebody of a similar age group, so then they're all the more motivated to daven for them, and that motivation has a special effect, which will therefore have a greater effect on their well-being. It will take away the 60th of their illness because of that extra identification. And that doesn't necessarily have to contradict the idea that Gemara has above Metzia, that it's an actual physical absorption that poses a danger to the visitor also. Because we also find that when a person visits somebody who identifies with, so he does absorb his suffering, he feels part of the pain they're going through, so it does create an actual risk, so to speak, to the patient, and therefore, even though that risk exists, so nonetheless, bitachon is a greater imperative. So maybe we'll just chazen this topic, because maybe there is enough that we should leave over until next week, so we'll just chazen we spoke about, and then we'll continue maybe with part two of this. Just quickly, what are we speaking about? We spoke about the fact that there is assumed to be a mitzvah problem in our Torah, or mid-divisal from the bitachon, either from and it's Rabban and Korlis, or from Hodat and Mesoderech Yelchuba, or from Kamos Kaladim to Musanela, from the Pasuk and Parshas Korach, or from Balach to Medrachav, or from Rakhaj Baruch's visit of Avram, all of these possible sources of the Mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. A lot of discussion of what exactly Rakhaj Baruch accomplished by visiting Avram, what was he modeling. We talked a little bit about the various reasons, about just being there. The Rosh has commented even if he's not awake, he'll find out later. Or Chaim Kanievsky saying even if he doesn't find out later, he's still accomplishing something, because you're helping out both spiritually and physically. You're helping out with tefillah, and physically you're helping out to do what you can. Some discussion about how much this applies in modern day hospital settings where you're not allowed to do anything. But, of course, by visiting, you help out in making sure that you get good service, which is certainly crucial also. And we talked about the discussion of what time of day should you come, how the things affect you, you come too early, too late, how does it affect your fuel, how does it affect your ability to help out. And we talked about the question of whether it's appropriate to daven for somebody to pass away. The Gemara in Ksubas about the maidservant who interrupted the tefillah so that Rebbe would die. The discussion of the Ran, that means you can pray for it, others disagreed. A little bit of discussion as to what exactly is the role of tefillah as an active humanity is an act of God, and then discussion of the spiritual state of the Chol, how you can affect that, the question of what exactly is the role of Tefillah as the crucial element of everything, the comments in the Ramban and the Ramah that if you don't daven for them, you haven't accomplished it, so does that mean you haven't accomplished anything, you haven't accomplished everything, you haven't accomplished this part, and it's a discussion in many facets. Let's talk a little bit about this aspect of conversation, how much that's a key part of what's going on. And we talked about the idea of the different levels of who comes when. That the first 2 days it should only be the people who are close. After the third day, then people start coming who are a little farther away, unless it's a sudden serious illness. And then we talked about the concerns of not being a burden on the patient, how you find that quoted in the Svarim, and the different details that apply to that. And then we talked about this concept of taking away 60th of the illness after Ben Gilo. So the suggestion of Gemara, there's an actual danger that comes from taking away this 160th, and what does Ben Gilo mean? The possibly spiritual, mystical type of interpretation of somebody who's born in the same mazel, or the interpretation that you find in other Rishonim, that somebody of a comparable age, or it's just somebody of a comparable temperament who will get along well, who will create an atmosphere where the condition will be alleviated, and also the possibility that this enhances the tefillah. If a person identifies more with a person, will have a greater impact, and all of that is discussion of this Ben Gilo concept. So a few other concepts we'd like to get to also, so God willing, we'll continue with part two next week.